If I'm a bad guy who does bad things, I don't mind turning off the nice security control that prevents me from doing that. In fact, I want to. I want to turn that off.
Organization needs to understand that Entra ID is becoming more and more a critical aspect of their full infrastructure identity security journey. They believe they are on a safe spot, but most of the times they are not.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas, and this week I'm in my office at the Semperis Dallas office. In the last year or so, organizations have become more aware that they need to take an active role in protecting the data in their Entra tenant and making it recoverable, because Microsoft doesn't do it for them. An alteration or deletion of an object, or a policy, or an application might be a result of an unintentional action from an administrator, for example, removing objects from on-premises Active Directory synchronization up to Entra ID via Entra ID Connect, or it could be from a malicious action by a threat actor. Since my initial podcast episode on this topic with Semperis PM Tuna Gazer over a year ago, the recovery situation has improved, but the attacks against Entra ID tenants have also gotten worse. What's the current state of Entra ID recoverability? What do you need to plan for? What steps should you take to protect your data and your business? To talk about that today, my guests are two of my TIMS colleagues, Tim Wolf, Senior Solutions Architect, and Tim Springston, Principal Program Manager, both at Semperis. Both Tims spent years at Microsoft. Wolf is a premier field engineer, so he has lots of customer deployment and architecture experience. And Springston is an identity expert and program manager for both on-premises Active Directory and cloud Azure AD, Entra ID services, especially focusing on recovery. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with sort of a basics on the on this topic. Tim S., we're wrestling on how do we address the Tims here, so I'll say Tim S., can we have an overview of the Microsoft shared responsibility model for Entra ID tenants? How does it differ from what's on-prem and what we're used to? And what are some of the implications of this model for the business?
Sure. Well, it's sort of that underlying premise of cloud being a really good thing. In Active Directory and other on-premise infrastructure items, you own all the infrastructure, the servers, the identities, the logical data, all the access from start to finish, it's your responsibility. The shared responsibility model limits that. And it's part of the value that cloud brings in general is this concept of, listen, Microsoft or other identity provider they'll make sure that the service is running. There's no servers, there's no service per se that I have to update and patch or deploy. It's just going to be there, and they guarantee that it's going to be there. However, that's their responsibility. Your responsibility differs, and the part that you're still responsible for is the logical continuity of the data. Do I have the right users there? Do they have the relationships they need? Are the groups there? Are the apps there? Do they work? All that stuff in the shared responsibility model is solely in the cloud service customer's bailiwick. They have to keep it up to date. So it's a really radical change, but it does mean that you have to make sure that the data has integrity, it's the right data, that at the end of the day, people can still sign in. And if they, you know, their application's working, that's all in the customer area of responsibility.
But that's been, shall I delicately put it, a journey. I would say that most customers never really looked into it to the level to realize, and I'm making generalizations here, to realize that they were responsible for that data in case if something happened.
Yeah, journey is the right word. So I think when the cloud and shared responsibility model first came out in the identity space, there wasn't a lot of awareness that you had to be responsible and keep track of your data, and that it was in your your ballpark to make sure that you had backups, because things can be deleted. And it wasn't until there was like a wave of, and it to some extent ongoing of accidents, you know, by companies making legitimate mistakes, that it became a little more obvious that, hey, we've got to have something, right? This data is not going to fix itself, right? This user isn't going to undelete itself. You know, we can't rely on the scream test, and we can't rely on just recreating things, because that reduces the time to recovery, and it puts businesses out of operation.
Yeah, and you know, and I fault Microsoft for not making it. They should be shouting this from the rooftops for their data customer protection, and it was. There was like a page, and that's still out there, called the shared responsibility model. And thinking through why doesn't Microsoft more widely advertise it? And the cynical answer is because they had no answer to protecting that data that was out there until recently. And so let's not, which is also unfortunate. And Tim S., you lived inside that for a while, but we'll dive into that.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll dive into that moving forward. So, Tim W., are we seeing more instances of Entra ID tenants being attacked? What's happening in these attacks?
So, yeah, absolutely. I would say week by week, more and more attacks are coming across Entra ID and the attached services around that. And I typically see two ways of attacks that are going on. So first of all, it's, let's say that attackers abusing how Entra ID is designed and try to abuse some misconfigurations by the service themselves. This is sadly something customers cannot really prevent against this, because this is something built in into the service, how it's designed, and this is where attacks are going on. But on the other side, the good thing is Microsoft is so fast in reacting to it and also solving the problems, which from my perspective, I would say this is a really good trade-off if we compare to the last 20 years, when all of the attacks that are happening against on-prem Active Directory relies then on patch management for the companies to say, hey, yeah, I need to patch my environment to protect me against this. And I would say it's kind of a trade-off as today, but I think the bigger problem is that we see today are the customer side of misconfiguration or the not usage of new technologies to protect against this modern kind of attack. Something that we see over the last, I would say, past year more and more coming are something against tokens or something against including device information to not say, oh yeah, we try to get a username and a password. It's more against, hey, we are trying to get a token, extract it, do it from somewhere else, from a different location, and then attacking the service. And the good thing is Microsoft has solutions for this to protect us and also other services around the market that are helping with that. But many organizations still are not using it or has some misconfigurations or some exclusions on top of it, which means, yeah, you could protect your environment, but yeah, still you have open doors, which means and you make it pretty simple for attackers to breach your environment. And this is also what I see. Customers need to understand shared responsibility is not only from the infrastructure side, it's also where you make your configurations.
The configuration, right. Could you dive a little bit more deeply for the people that aren't familiar when you talk about a token attack, a token-based attack? Could you step through an example of a simple token-based attack so everybody understands where you're going on that?
Yeah. So maybe if you look a little bit in the past when you have experience with on-prem Active Directory where you have tickets, it's similar stuff inside of the cloud. It names token. What's happening at the end of the day, if you make your authentication against Entra ID, so you're going to Entra ID asking, hey, I need to authenticate against a specific service, then Entra ID is give you something called access tokens and refresh tokens. With these tokens at the end of the day, it's providing the information, hey, this is where I want to access, and these are my access, my privileges that I have for a specific service. So you can imagine that inside It's like your driver license. On your driver license, you have the information, okay, I'm allowed to drive normal cars or maybe motorcycles. Then with that, I can get to specific services like Exchange Online, like Teams, and also external services like Salesforce to access this information, can provide my driver license, my token, and say, yeah, this is fine, where I can get access. Problem is, if somebody else is getting a driver license, then he could provide and say, hey, it's a different user. So I'm Tim, but I maybe give the driver license from Sean to say, hey, he has the specific permission. So let's say maybe Sean, you have global administrative rights inside of a tenant. If I get your driver license, your token, then I'm allowed to step inside of EntroID, designate it and say, hey, I am Sean, and get the right permission. And this is what we see today, that attackers not try to get access to the password because, hey, we all have, hopefully, phishing-resistant authentication. But if this is already completed, then I try to get my token, maybe from the device or through a different way, do something with that, and then impersonate as somebody else to get access. So it's less than stealing the access, it's more stealing, you're already a specific person with a specific token.
So you could think of broadly, like an access token being broadly equivalent to like a Kerberos TGS, you know, giving you access to a specific service. And then in terms of the threat actor getting access to these tokens, they compromise the device and then they obtain the token that way.
Could be. It's one example, something that we see over the past year, that this is something more and more coming, that if organizations are not protecting their full zero trust protection layer, which means, say, in today's world, we have user, we have devices, but if you're not protecting your device, correct, then it could be make it simple for an attacker to, let's say, I'm grabbing this information, the bits, the bytes from your device, which are an access token, and then prevent or show them to EntroID from another location, from a different device, and then do some evil stuff, because then EntroID is, hey, yeah, we already authenticate you, so fine, come in.
Right, right. Tim S., so let's say a threat actor gains control of my tenant. They've got global administrator, they kick everybody else out, let's add to the joy and let's say that they, you know, alter or delete a bunch of stuff in the environment, all that. So you want to get a hold of Microsoft and say, help, get me access. You run my infrastructure.
Right.
Get it back for me. What happens and how long does it take as far as we know? And walk us through what that sort of looks like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first I'm going to say that this is a question that I hear frequently. And, you know, just to set the stage on it, there's a lot of concern out in the industry on what if I lose access to my IDP. EntroID is no different. For this scenario, you know, hypothetically, I've been locked out. And the scariest one is a threat actor. But in reality, it's been a thing that people have been able to do for them to themselves for a long time. So conditional access, it's like Spider-Man, right?
Right.
With great responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Uncle Ben told us that. And conditional access is very much that power. Conditional access, when it first came out, they said, listen, don't lock yourself out. And you'll even see that in EntroID conditional access, a really cool little feature that says, don't lock yourself out, do an exclusion. The process for regaining access is the same. There's a call to Microsoft. It goes through the support channel. If you're a larger organization and you have a really good account system and a good contract with Microsoft, you can go, you can leverage your account management team to expedite it. But at the end of the day, it goes to a team and a specialized team that is dedicated to validating people are who they say they are in this scenario. my recollection, and it's been a few years, but I was there for a while, and that team was called the Data Protection Team. My recollection was that they have geography-based teams, because it's not really just about getting access. The technical part of making it happen is trivial, right? If I have access to the back end, I can alter it so that magic, somebody has their access back. At Microsoft, that's a highly restricted action. As you can expect, since they maintain this infrastructure for all these different organizations, they have to keep it secure. And so this very privileged action has to be really well thought out, and it has to be really well secured. You know, it's just like the MGM Grand compromise. You don't want somebody to call up and say, hey, yeah, I'm the right guy. And yeah. Then suddenly it happens.
Oh, this is Scattered Spider.
I'm not Scattered Spider. I'm the true admin.
Really?
You don't want that to happen. So they have a process. And, you know, what I recall from the process was that it's legally sanctioned by Microsoft, meaning their legal team went through it. It validates government-issued identity. It goes through multiple layers of approval and review, and then you get access. And the access will be essentially staged like an admin account. How long does that take? It depends. It would depend on the geography. It depends on the scenario. I would expect, like, if all the stars aligned and you had savvy level of attention on the deal, I would probably think days. If I was an average enterprise customer, then I would probably expect a week or weeks.
Yeah, my call to action would be also there. Have a good relationship with your account managers inside of Microsoft and make sure that...
Yeah, totally.
That you maybe know what kind of informations you need to have for this worst situation that this can happen, and also be prepared that you have on a safe space. How do you know how to access internally to this specific informations? Because they would not just asking for a small paper, they will ask for many information. And this is something you should prepare for yourself and know, okay, with your legal team, with your admins, with your security, make sure that you know, how do I access this information? Because even if for Microsoft it can take days, weeks, whatever, if you don't have this information as fast as possible, it's also a responsibility.
You know, I have never looked for it, but just thinking out loud, I would, if I were Microsoft, I wouldn't publish the information that they're looking for. Because threat actors will say, okay, that's what I need to go hunt for, and that's what I need to build. So you won't even know what they would ask for until everybody's running around like crazy and going, we can't access our tenant.
Totally true. Yeah. Prepare in advance. That's a great call out, Tim.
Yeah. And as best you can guess what it would be. Mm-hmm. And one of the aspects of this, and we're going to get into this a little bit more, but I just have to pull out my favorite analogy at get any opportunity, which is your car is stolen. So your car gets stolen, you call the police, and the police say, okay, we've got a report, prove that you're the owner of the car, et cetera, and then a few days to a week later, they say, hey, we got your car back, come and get it, and we'll give you access to your car. And you get your car back and someone has dumped a bag of garbage on the front seat and they've set fire to the upholstery in the back seat. And the police go, hey, that's not my problem. You asked for your car. Here's your car. And you have to now make it usable again. So
that's the shared responsibility model, Sean.
That is the shared. We have to come up with some kind of analogy to call this with the shared responsibility model on that. So recently, Tim S., Microsoft has made its Entra ID Identity Resilience Recovery Solution into public preview.
Sure.
That's a big deal. And this is the first instance of being able to do any kind of recovery other than what Merrill Fernando has put together. And by the way, just a moment of notice. I don't know if you saw it today. Merrill has resigned from Microsoft as of today. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Tell us about this new feature and what actions people should take and what they should be aware of, what it has and what its limitations are.
It's a cool feature, and it's one I'm pretty familiar with. It's I worked on it in its early stages when I was still at Microsoft. You know, I mentioned earlier that there's this sort of trend of people having accidents, and you know, I had an accident. I locked myself out, and or I had an accident where, oops, I deleted all my applications for the business, and now the business can't run. And there was a sort of a groundswell of that type of thing happening in the earlier years of IntraID. And that's the impetus behind the IntraID backup and recovery service. The core functionality and the core purpose was, we really need to enable people the ability to restore from accidents. And so what you have there is a backup and recovery service focused on changes. It does, you know, it looks at the changes that take place within a specific tenant over the course of a day. It pulls a snapshot of those changes and lets you review that snapshot of changes, and it lets you recover those changes. Notice what I've said is changes, not deletions.
Yeah, so just to say also, Tim, you were on that team, right? You were on that team?
I was actually the guy who you mentioned the shared responsibility model page, and for the IntraID documentation, that was the page that I made my team publish.
Oh, okay. You wrote that.
Yeah. So the one on the IntraID. But that was what I was working on. And it was twofold, right? So I mentioned changes, but deletions, you know, the solution there is soft delete. Like if I have an accident, we need to have the capability to restore from deletion. Very analogous to Active Directory, where you have recycle bin. This is recycle bin for the cloud. And so there's two efforts for accidents. One is, let's have some change recovery, which is what this new feature does. And the other is, let's have soft delete, so that if somebody accidentally deletes things, they can get them back. And I think this is a really great solution for accidents, recovery from accidents, focused on the core identity pieces of users and groups and the basic security posture of CA or authentication. The things that it isn't focused on is this other trend which has come up in the past few years. It's the trend of compromise. The term is they don't hack in, they log in, right? They're looking at gaining access to the identity one way or the other. Once they have access, they can do whatever they want. Would soft deletion and change control inhibit a threat actor from either locking you out of your tenant or deleting all of the critical business items? No. Even if I had, they have a really cool story on this, and I really love this feature for protected actions in CA policy. You can tell it, hey, nobody can do deletes, right? You can't permanently delete items. But the miracle of admin access is that you can turn that off.
Right.
Right. So if I'm a bad guy who does bad things, I don't mind turning off the nice security control that prevents me from doing that. In fact, I want to turn that off. And so the Microsoft Backup Recovery does a wonderful job. And I think it, especially when it's in beta now, but when it releases, it'll be perfect for that scenario of, hey, we need to protect against accidents. However, the landscape has evolved. And at this point, it's not just that. You need to have protection from permanent deletion. You need to focus on security posture items and have them restored. And the security posture, as Tim mentioned, and I think you too, Sean, it doesn't limit itself just to Intra. People get onto Intra from devices, which must be managed. And if the device security is not good and the device isn't compliant, things aren't working. So now we have Intune in the mix as well. There's a broader scenario that I think has to be addressed as well.
For me, somebody who was not working on this feature, while I was seeing the first version out of it, it was for me, it's pretty cool. After some time then, and in the today implementation of it, it feels for me like it's a protection against, oopsie, I did something, I misconfigured something, but not something like, hey, somebody is really know what they are doing and is hard deleting stuff and really want to destroy something. Because what you was also mentioning is that, hey, attackers know how to turn off some specific stuff. But coming back to my point where I was starting, that customers are missing or doing some misconfigurations. If you're not turning specific stuff on, like the Entra backup and recovery services, or like the hard deletion protection, which if you never turn it on, then yeah, it's still the protection against a big oopsie and not what attackers really targeting to.
Right.
So I, you know, when we're often talking to folks, we're dealing with two different groups of people. There's the infrastructure people and then there's the security people. And the infrastructure people are focused on the oops. You know, my longstanding, you never want to be in a hallway with a bunch of AD admin in cubicles and hear someone say, oops.
Yeah.
nope, and then there's the security people, you know, that are talking more about what we're talking about here as a way of describing it. Tim Wolf, and you know, you're sort of initiated this conversation. And so the sort of the question that I asked Tim Springson, but I guess the question is, how would you list the risks of that an organization needs to be aware of, and they need to prepare themselves to mitigate or to minimize the risks given this situation? You have an Entra ID tenant, you have your data there, you have oops protection. We just said you have devices you have to worry about, conditional access. What are your thoughts, your recommendations for the business on in their Entra ID risk exposure?
Yeah. So first of all, organization needs to understand that Entra ID is becoming more and more a critical aspect of their full infrastructure identity security journey. So what I see in a few of my conversations that I have with organization is, yeah, we have Entra ID. We understand that it's critical, but they also then sometimes in the same sentence, they are meaning, yeah, but it's kind of protected by Microsoft, or it's well protected. So what I also see today is that they believe they are on a safe spot, but most of the times they are not. And they need to really understand if Entra ID is going down, if it's the service themselves, or if they make some misconfiguration and just make a simple condition access policy to lock out everybody and is not able to sign in again. This is business critical today. You're not available to sign in to Teams, to SharePoint, to Salesforce, to your business critical application. And also what's today important, also, your AI agents will have some problems in signing in and doing some stuff for all of your organization. So to really understand Entra ID is business critical. It's also something that you need to protect, to prevent, but also in terms of I did an oopsie, I need to know how do I come back to a previously state, which Entra ID recovery is more or less helping for some specific case. But also, like you mentioning, from security perspective, if somebody is doing really evil stuff inside of an Entra ID tenant, we have a big problem. And this is where you need to protect yourself to understand, okay, this is business critical. This is where I need to make a backup, have configuration, have secrets, whatever in place to know, hey, if I need to come back, I'd be prepared for this kind of situations.
Well, normally, you know, I have a longstanding policy on here to really not talk about Sempra's products on this podcast and just talk about general stuff. But I think it's important to understand, because what we're talking about here are gaps, significant gaps between of what Microsoft is going to provide you. And by the way, they don't say, well, you know, we can do this backup and recovery of this, but we also have this one API that you can do and write your own sort of a thing. No, there isn't that. It's one of my favorite British terms. It's a dog's breakfast in terms of getting this stuff back. And so, Tim, could you talk a little bit about disaster recovery for Entra tenant Sempra's recovery solution and what it's designed to address as compared to what the Microsoft public preview addresses.
Sure. I'm gonna assume that's Tim S.
That would be correct. The answer from Tim W would be much shorter than Tim S.
He would have a good one too. But so the disaster recovery for intra tenant service that we have is designed for beyond the scenario. Especially since we've in the past year and a half, we've been focusing on security specific scenarios. What happens if I need to restore my security posture rapidly? What does my security posture mean? And I'll tell you that one of the things that we've heard very loudly and clearly from organizations we work with, and we work with a lot of really big ones, is what's important for me may be in broad strokes important for everybody else. But when you get down to it, I need to be able to choose what that is. So there's a selectivity aspect of being able to understand what to restore. So for Dret, what we focused on is making sure those core capabilities are there for authentication that revolves around conditional access policy, but it extends beyond that to devices and to Intune policies and to roles, custom roles and role access, and most importantly, privileged identity management and getting those relationships back to users and groups. So what we've done is we've focused on building those foundational capabilities, and now we're focusing on some of these advanced scenarios that are security specific, or could be used for just normal change control, change recovery, but you would use in the really horrible moment, like a truly awful incident, where someone has gone in and done all the bad things, right? And you need to put the right controls back. So that means plan in advance. And we've added a feature that allows admins to prepare, hey, these are my tier zero security items, and save that preparation so that you could go into a backup and just restore just those real quick. And same for Intune. Maybe Intune is part of the tier zero or line of business applications. You know, every organization has a VIP, CEO, CIO, CISO, whatever. You could have an execs, right, group, and recover them. The point here is that focused recovery is key in a security incident. And the order of recovery is also key. If you look at, hey, if I look at like what changed in this tenant over like a month, that could be a lot. And it could, a lot of that could be totally unrelated to an incident, like a security incident or a threat actor. You wouldn't want to restore everything. So what we've done is we're trying to optimize, you know, the ability for admins to recover and organizations to recover what's needed first, next, et cetera. And we're building plans and documentation that will help them kind of navigate the process if it were to happen. So playbooks is what we call them, but you know, they're essentially documents that navigate the NIST incident framework in detail. Here's what you do in what order to accomplish this incident. So between the documentation and the actual functional abilities of the product, we're trying to actually enable organizations for this possible day that hopefully never comes,
right,
but it's becoming more prevalent every day.
Well, certainly, you know, one of the basic challenges that you have, or anyone that's designing a product like this has, is that if an object is hard deleted, it's gone.
Yeah.
And all the relationships are gone. So it's not, you're not just recreating an object like out of the equivalent of the recycle bin or
the direct
version of the recycle bin. You're actually rebuilding relationships, which the analogous to on-premises deleting, you know, you've got a user object and they've associated with a whole bunch of it. They're ACLed all throughout the environment.
Yeah.
When that thing is hard deleted in on-prem, it's gone, baby, gone. You have to have beforehand collected all of those relationships to know how to rebuild them, right?
Totally. Yeah, that's true. I'll add a little bit, if you don't mind, on that one, because it's so important.
It
is important. At the end of the day, a user object is just a user object. The relationship to permission, to a Teams group, to a conditional access policy, is that what a user object really makes? What is the person behind it? The difference between a CIO and, let's say, a normal frontline worker, it's not that the user object, it's kind of marked differently. It's the relationship, the assignments to permission. And so if you just have the capabilities of restoring a user object, well, you're missing really important stuff.
You could do a graph query for that right now, and
I could do a graph query, pull the data, put the data back. It's nothing. It is those relationships, and for an admin, it's usually PIM role assignments. We index those, and on backup, the number of items we get. Like if you did a count of users and groups for any tenant, users, groups, AUs, all the things. And then you compare the count of any of those to relationships have blown away.
I'll bet.
Billions of relationships. That's the critical aspect to actually backing up and recovering the state within Intra and then out to Intune and to Exchange. That indexing comes in key. So like if you get a new object ID, when you restore from permanent deletion, that would usually be the gotcha. Like, well, gosh, now I've got to reestablish those relationships. I've got to put them in the groups I need, that user you were supposed to be in or what have you. We do that automatically. In the future, I think we will want to extend that out to some content areas. Tim and others, we've talked about this, and it's a totally doable thing. And we're not talking about content recovery. We're talking about recovery of access, even in the face of permanent deletion. We've done POCs. This is a great area. When it comes to Intra, we do it all, right? We'll put it all back and it'll be workable, even if the identity has been permanently deleted, according to a threat actor.
Yeah, I think this is also one of the things that organization needs to really understand, that if they're looking on what's on-premise, what's going on, that with the access to the database of Active Directory, which contains all of the stuff, the objects, the relationships themselves, it was easy because you have access to the database, make a backup of the database, restore it, and everything is looking exactly the same. For the cloud, this is something you don't have access to the database, and sometimes it feels like that Microsoft with their own services not even have the same access to the database. But this means at the end of the day, you need to touch every single object and also every single relationship, which makes it so complicated to say, hey, and this is maybe also the one reason that I would guess that why there's not this one button, please restore everything inside of Entra ID, because that's typically not really possible. And organizations need to understand at the end of the day, it's like the objects, the relationships, you need to have.
Yeah. Would you want that though? That's the real question. Like they understand you, that's not really what you want. I don't want to put everything back to last Thursday because, hey, I changed my password on Friday. Right. And so, you know, I wouldn't be able to sign in. So it's more complex than a restore all. And it becomes more complex if a bad guy is trying to make it more complex.
I think that's sort of the crux of what Tim said it probably better than I did, which is, again, to map for people to map back to on-premises that they're more familiar with. If you restore a user object from backup, you're restoring the SID, which means you've automatically restored the relationship throughout. As Tim says, it's not just the user object, it's all the relationships. You've automatically restored all the relationships because that SID is out in that file server and down in that folder, and everything comes back magically. But in Entra, it's an object ID, and you cannot recreate the exact same object ID if the thing has been hard deleted.
Yeah.
So
it's tough to little catch the accidents, but hard delete is really where the concern is.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Hard delete, it's like, hey, you are exploding the user object, and there's a cool security mechanism inside of Entro ID which don't allow you to generate your own object ID because it's a security measurement. But for disaster recovery, well, you're not available to restore the SID, what we know from on-prem, it's the object ID in Entra, and all of the relationships are depending on this object ID. And if this is gone, well, you have basically a new user, which is looking maybe exactly like me, but it's like the DNA is changing, which means it's a different user and all of the relationships are gone.
I like you the DNA analogy.
You have a Tim Wolf pod person.
We've cloned. Cloned him. His DNA is slightly off now.
That looks like it. And then you get, we go into science fiction.
He functions the same way.
Yeah, but you get replicative delay and then they start self-destructing. Yeah. And we get into Blade Runner. Right? I want to make sure we cover this one thing that's very popular, and I've both talked to both of you gentlemen about this, which is the question that's being asked: if my tenant has been compromised, otherwise hosed or whatever, why can't I, or it seems like a good idea that I should be able to spin up a new tenant and populate that new tenant, because I know it's pristine, I know there's no threat actors in it. Maybe that's the sort of the cloud equivalent of doing an isolated recovery environment. What are your thoughts on, is this practical? Is it a good idea?
From my perspective, I would say, no, it's not a good idea, but consulting answer, it really depends on where you're coming from. If you're coming from the perspective of saying, hey, I want to make a replica of my tenant for dev test purposes, then I would say it would be a fantastic idea if I know my limitations, again, with the object ideas, with the tenant, it looks a little bit different. But if you're coming from the perspective of, hey, I have a total disaster case, like, sadly, I need to say it again, like what we know from on-prem perspective, that we have our Active Directory, take it from here, put it to another location, and it is looking exactly the same. Problem in Entro ID, this is not possible, which means it could look similar, but it will never be exactly the same, which means Entro ID will be a little bit different. And also what you should not forget about, and this is one of the strengths for Microsoft, but also in this terms, kind of a weakness, all of the connected services, Dynamics, Office or Microsoft 365, Azure, subscription, your enterprise agreement, all of the stuff, it's connected in the background to one specific tenant. And if you're now thinking about merging it to another tenant because you say, hey, my first tenant is a completely disaster, I need to restore into a second one that looks then healthy, it maybe looks healthy from Entro ID's side, but everything around of it is still burning. So, and I love the analogy from you, Tim, the last time we was talking about this stuff. It's like, if your house is getting burned down, do you want to try to fix it? Or do you just say, yeah, I'm moving to a new location?
There's a lot of that. Do you mind if I add something here?
I expect you to.
Sure. I'm expected to. So... I hear this question all the time. I mean, I speak very, very frequently to large organizations and it comes up in every instance. And it is an analogy between an Active Directory. I have to restore the infrastructure and therefore I start anew in some ways, right? I build it anew from backup. For Entra, it's not the same. And Tim has called out a lot of the gotchas, the complications and the technical difficulties on this. And the house analogy is apt. However, I think that this is at a place where resiliency is the new frontier. And by that, I mean, listen, this is going to be something that becomes the new resiliency. It's not just I restored my Entra ID tenant from tenant A to B and all the complication that comes around that. But maybe it is I can fail over to another identity provider as well. This could be, well, Entra is down and we go to other service like Okta or Okta to Entra or what have you. I think resiliency starts to transform. For our part, the cross-tenant restore is how I term it. This restore from tenant A to tenant B, it has some real value. It has gotchas, but high fidelity test environment, as Tim mentioned, would be wonderful, right? I can take a copy of what I have and my and maybe anonymize it, right? And sanitize it so that we're not taking over critical information about individuals, et cetera. But more to the point, if what happens if someone does that scorched earth or does lock me out of tenant A, and I need to get back up and running with tenant B, even if I have a, you know, what we like to think of as a minimum viable tenant or minimum viable service, just enough to get the business running, just enough to make sure that our revenue is there or that we can help patients, right, for healthcare. That, I think, is something that is important, and it's certainly an area that we're focusing on here. So you'll hear more about this, but I think there's a groundswell of concern over this because shared responsibility says it is my responsibility to make sure everything's configured right and it's working. If it's my responsibility, I need to make sure I have a backup plan.
Well, what would you say then also in terms of, okay, you said something, okay, that I have the minimum valuable that my business is running. For me, and I also want to hear your opinion on that, my biggest aha that I most of the time have doing my conversation with organizations around this stuff is if I tell them, hey, you could, if it's still on your plan, migrate or move Entra ID to a new Entra tenant. But what you should also not forget, all of your business critical applications right. need to be touched to yeah, move totally. Them and tell them, hey, it's right. not the tenant.
It's not a one and done.
It's something new. So you need to touch and yeah. talk maybe to your application owners, to your developers. Hey, you need to talk to a different tenant now to keep running this business.
Yeah.
And then also thinking about on the long term, is your plan to stay in a new tenant or is it maybe to move back? Because
sure.
then you need to also maybe touch all other applications or touch the first applications back to the original tenant.
That's true. You know, there are some things. It's interesting because the restore from permanent deletion, it actually accomplishes much of what you would need for restore to other tenant. However, there are scenarios, like I restored everything from tenant A to tenant B. And in that scenario, when I'm done, I'm going to have to do some things. Like to your point, Tim, okay, well, this particular application had a secret or a key or a certificate. And I need to put that there. Or there was a domain name registered in the source tenant and I need to get it to the destination, right? So that I can use it with users or apps or what have you. So these are things that I think automation, a lot of these automation can help with and services can help with, right? Even if it gets you 80% there, that extra 20% can be an acceptable risk if things really have gone scorched earth and you're in this scenario.
You know, yeah. I think this comes back down to the myopia of identity people, and it's not unique to us, of course, but when you know, it's the old saying, when you're a hammer, everything's a nail. And so right. we're always focused on restoring identity, get the tenant. The purpose of the tenant is to service applications.
Correct.
So you can do a magnificent job restoring the tenant to another tenant or whatever instantiation you want to call it. But without the applications that you've built around it, your mm-hmm. management is going to go, this isn't done. This right. isn't even started.
Yeah. It's when the dollars start flowing, when I can schedule the patient procedures or whatever right. the business thing is. Once that is taking place, when people can sign in and sign the checks.
Right.
That.
Yeah. And that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Tim, because that really is one of the deciding factors from a business viewpoint of this alternate tenant versus fixing your existing tenant. It is which of these options is the fastest way to establish trustworthiness in my identity provider.
It's right.
Not just getting the users back. It's making sure the threat actors are gone, yada, yada, yada. Which of these, whichever is the faster one, is what the business leaders are going to choose
yeah.
to get to an acceptable, trustworthy thing. So this has been great. We've gone on for a bit. We could go on for quite a bit longer. What I'd like to do is ask each of you a couple of closing thoughts of folks that have been listening to this and going, oh, crap, maybe I'm a little protected. I'm not as protected as I thought. We've got a new thing coming. The Microsoft has got a new thing. What are some calls to action for people that have hung on to the end of this episode that they should go off and do? Start with Tim Wolf.
So my first call to action would be understand what are the concepts between soft and hard delete and what kind of effect it has inside of your environment. That you really understand that, oh, there are some gaps that I need to close. And also which objects are affected by dysfunctionalities, because this is another gap that not this dysfunctionalities of soft delete is not affected by all of the objects that you have inside of your tenant.
Right.
Which means
not
even
everything
if you say,
is soft deleted.
Yeah, exactly. So even if you say I'm trusting on soft delete, you're still missing some really important configurations.
Mr. S.
It's a lot of the same, but what I would probably say is take a look and see what's important to your organization now. Some people already know. If you're an admin, you know, this is the conditional access policy that governs most of the access, most users sign in. This is the role that people use. There's some that are built in, there's some that are custom. These are the users who have admin access. You need to really know what all these things that are important in your organization are. So the first step in resiliency is not just having a backup plan or a backup tool or capabilities to put things back. You need to know what's important to your organization. So, you know, if you know what's important, you know what to put back, right? You know when it's broken. So I would strongly suggest doing that inventory. There's tools out there. I'm not going to plug any, but there's plenty where you can identify tier zero items, right, in your environment. Intra and other. There's other things that will help you in the same way. But have that and plan ahead. Planning ahead is key. If you know what to do when the bad things happen, then you're going to be the person who's going to end up being the savior, as opposed to the person who didn't get things fixed in time.
Right. So plan ahead. Plan today.
And test it. I think this is the cool thing inside of Entra ID, that because of the missing capabilities of having access to the full database, it's like you need to touch every single object, which from my perspective, if organization tells me, yeah, we cannot touch it because again, it would be a different tenant. We cannot do it. We don't have the capabilities. You can test many, many things, object by object, object type by object type, inside of your production environment, to understand what's happening in the background. So also the stuff, plan and execute it. It's the key.
Right. Yeah. Plan ahead of time. So when, as you say, bad things happen, you're not caught by surprise, and you don't have that data.
Totally.
Thank you, gentlemen. Great conversation. Very interesting topic, and it's interesting to hear how it's evolved over time, and of course, how it will continue to evolve over time over something that has become so critical and people yet don't fully understand what it means for each of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to the HIP podcast brought to you by Semperis, the leader in identity resilience. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please give us a rating or leave us a review, as that really helps other listeners find the show. You can find past episodes and more information at hipconf.com/podcasts. I'm Sean Doobie. Stay secure, and I'll see you in the next one.